You're listening to an analysis story on the audio version of The Tie. Thanks for listening. The Tie is a nonprofit newsroom that is funded by our audience. So if you appreciate this article and you'd like to help us do more, head on over to support.thetie.ca and become a Tie builder. You choose the amount to give, and you can cancel anytime.
BC's underground economy is huge and deadly. By Jeff Meggs, August 22, 2024.
Editor's note, a version of this piece first appeared on Jeff Meggs' site Lotusland. Before a bullet crashed through the front window of a Richmond sushi restaurant in 2020 and killed him, Jianjun Zhu was alleged to be one of BC's biggest money launderers, handling more than $80 million in one five-month period in 2015 and as much as $220 million annually. The director of Silver International, an underground bank, Zhu could turn over millions of dollars a day, according to BC Civil Forfeiture Office, converting the ill-gotten gains of Mexican cocaine smugglers and countless other criminals into apparently legitimate funds. If a single group of money launderers could do more than $200 million a year in business, then how big is BC's total underground economy? If police can't bring people like Zhu to justice, why should any money launderer fear justice? The answers are elusive, but point to the massive size of BC's drug business. It's fair to assume that the underground economy that includes the narcotics business is as large in some respects as mining or tourism, employs tens of thousands of British Columbians but pays no taxes, drives huge policing costs, and has made fentanyl overdoses the largest single cause of death. Unwinding such a huge part of the economy is no simple task, particularly when it is so hard to see. The Manzo restaurant shooting was a rare instance of the underground economy briefly becoming visible, thanks in particular to reporting by the Vancouver Sun's Kim Bolin, who covered the entire Zhu murder trial. According to prosecutors, the shot that killed Zhu was probably intended for Paul King Jean, who was injured in the hail of bullets. Jean was a target of the RCMP's massive e-pirate investigation, a multi-year effort that collapsed as a result of inadvertent disclosures and administrative errors by the RCMP. Jean escaped prosecution when e-pirate folded in 2018, and later beat eight separate charges in 2023, when a special prosecutor concluded there was insufficient likelihood of a conviction. While Jean must be presumed innocent, the Silver International people clearly kept dangerous company. Two other guests that night at the Manzo were later killed in separate shootings. In September, BC Supreme Court Justice Jean Wachuk will announce her verdict in the trial of Richard Reed, the man accused of firing seven shots at the Manzo, killing Zhu and wounding Jean. Tip of the iceberg. Yet even if Reed is convicted, there is little or no prospect British Columbians will learn who paid for the hit and why. The Silver International saga is just the tip of a money laundering iceberg that economists have struggled to measure. One of the most ambitious efforts anywhere was undertaken here in BC in 2019, when then Finance Minister Carol James struck an expert panel on money laundering in BC real estate. The panel's report, Combating Money Laundering in BC Real Estate, concluded that BC's underground economy was probably equivalent to about 2.5% of provincial GDP. An admittedly conservative estimate at the low end of previous guesses. With BC's real GDP estimated at $300 billion in 2023, that puts the size of the underground economy at as much as $7.5 billion annually. To put that in perspective, that's bigger than tourism's estimated contribution to the provincial economy, about $5 billion in 2021, and similar to mining, at $5.9 billion. Narcotics is a large, but unknown share of that total. Unlike tourism and mining, however, the narcotics business pays no taxes. Tourism paid $1.4 billion in 2021, and offers its employees, if they can be called that, high-risk work for unreliable rewards. British Columbians pay an enormous price for fentanyl trafficking in countless ways, from targeted shootings to the deadly toll of fentanyl overdoses. Chaired by law professor and former Deputy Attorney General Maureen Maloney, the expert panel noted that not all the revenues of organized crime are laundered. Some are plowed straight back into the business in cash payments or purchases. The narcotics business, in other words, is worth billions of dollars a year. In the drug business, about 20% of the cash is plowed back in, but 80% of the proceeds need laundering to hide the proceeds of crime from police. International capital flows make a good home for dark money, and some countries are more attractive than others for launderers due to their high GDP, which makes it easier to hide criminal proceeds in lucrative businesses or assets, or due to the financial expertise and low corruption generally associated with high GDP, which makes such countries safe havens for the money. If this sounds like a description of British Columbia, it is. As far back as 2004, the Fraser Institute's Stephen Easton made the credible calculation that the cannabis industry, then illegal, was worth $2 billion annually in wholesale value, making it equivalent then to between 1.5 and 4.6% of GDP. Now legalized, the cannabis industry operating under BC government regulations is still worth $2 billion annually, but an additional and significant share of the business is still underground. 30% of cannabis users say they still access the illegal market. It was the massive illicit cannabis trade, of course, that incubated the growth of the violent cocaine and bud smuggling industry that now traffics fentanyl. Given the very large size of the narcotics business and the underground economy, it is reasonable to assume that its participants are all around us, in law offices, driving trucks, operating warehouses, selling real estate, or celebrating a deal at a restaurant. When Jian Junzhu died and Paul King Jin escaped by a hair in 2020, it was a brief and violent glimpse of a world that exists, unseen, all around us. Frustrated by the collapse of ePirate, BC prosecutors sought to seize at least some of Zhu's wealth through a civil forfeiture action directed at Kaixian Qin, his wife. After several years of legal battle, the province settled for $1 million in cash, jewels and casino chips, less than the average daily turnover at Silver International. The message seems clear. BC money launderers have little to fear from police. It's others in their illicit business they need to watch out for. Read more, Rights Plus Justice.
Thanks for stopping by the Tai today. Anytime you're in the mood to listen to important stories written well, we'll be here. And if you'd like to keep independent media going strong, head over to thetai.ca and click on the Support Us button to pitch in. Finally, big thank you to all of our Tai builders who made this story possible.